This episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Join the millions of students learning on Skillshare today with a special offer. Get 2 months absolutely free. All you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. So my book Louder Than Words begins with the line, "Attention for your work is not a birthright." I believe this to the core of my being. Some people think that simply making something great entitles them to the attention of people around them, but it's simply not true. If you want their attention, you must earn it. This is equally true in leadership, sales, or any arena where you have to cultivate awareness and attention for your ideas in order to succeed. The best way to capture attention is through the power of story. Story binds us. It reminds us of what we have in common. It builds empathy. It builds trust. And it allows you to leverage common ground to inspire people to move toward your vision. Think about the last time you were inspired by someone. I guarantee it was probably because they were sharing a story that resonated to the core of your being. We are defined by the stories that we believe. So on this episode, we're going to be talking about the power of story and how leaders can use it to help others on their team to do better work, to stay aligned, and to produce great work each day. Our guest is author Paul Smith, whose new book is called 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell. Paul is going to be joining us in just a minute. Before we jump in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. We've talked many times on this show about the importance of developing new skills and how people who develop new skills not only excel professionally, but they also tend to find their lives much more satisfying because they're constantly pushing themselves, learning new things, trying new things, expanding the boundaries of their curiosity and their imagination. Well, Skillshare is a great partner to help you do just that. It's an online learning community with thousands of classes for creators, for entrepreneurs, for curious people everywhere. You can take classes in illustration, graphic design, photography, creative writing, animation, film and video, productivity, leadership, just about anything you want to learn, you can learn it on Skillshare. So whether you're picking up a new skill for your job, or maybe you're figuring out your next side project, maybe you want to pursue a longtime passion, pick up a hobby, Skillshare has classes for you. As a matter of fact, we're talking about storytelling today. And on Skillshare, I am a premium subscriber to Skillshare, and I was perusing the courses today, and there are courses on storytelling. There's one called Storytelling 101, Character, Conflict, Context, and Craft. There's one on creative ways to generate story ideas, which is something a lot of us struggle with. You know, we know that we want to be able to tell good stories, but where do those stories come from? Well, there are classes on Skillshare to help you do just that. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer for listeners of the Accidental Creative Podcast. You can get 2 months absolutely free. That's 2 months of access to thousands of classes absolutely free. You can't beat it. You might as well try it out. To sign up, just go to skillshare.com/AC. Again, that's skillshare.com/AC to start your 2 months now. That's skillshare.com/AC. We thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, today's guest is Paul Smith. Paul is an incredible speaker. He's a trainer. He's an author. He's written several books. His first book was called Lead with a Story, which was a phenomenal success. His new book is called The 10 Stories Great Leaders Tell. Paul, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Hey, Todd. Thanks very much for having me back on.
So you've written several books on storytelling, and this is something, I mean, you and I have talked about how this is kind of something that wasn't really a topic of discussion maybe 20 years ago in the leadership space, but now storytelling has become a really central theme in a lot of organizations. Why did you want to write another book about leaders telling stories?
Yeah, so I'll give you a couple of answers. One, a strategic answer, but then I'll give you a more practical answer. So the strategic answer is that those other books that, you know, you and I have talked about before, I went back and I counted, and across the three books, there are 70 different types of stories that I have discussed and advocated that people use, you know, either as a leadership story or sales and marketing story or story that parents tell their kids. And over 250 individual examples are across those three books. So I have to admit that I haven't exactly been choiceful with, you know, what the most important ones are. Like, these are all important stories. And I think they are, but the truth is not every story is as important as every other story. So I need it at some point to prioritize and say to my readers and listeners, look, yes, I've talked about lots of types of stories, but here are the most important ones. And the truth is, what story you tell is far more important than how you tell it. And that's kind of a dangerous thing for me to admit, because I spend, as you know, most of my professional time teaching people how to be better storytellers. But the truth is, what story you choose to tell is more important than the way you deliver it. So I needed, just from a strategy standpoint as a business owner, to get clear on what the most important stories were. But the practical reason is, Todd, I got one of those weird phone calls one time from, exactly 16 months ago, from a publisher, a different publisher that, you know, my one publisher published all three of my first books, but a new publisher, and I didn't know this was a thing. Maybe you did, but this whole idea of mini books, how long have you been familiar with this?
Oh, yeah. And actually, I consume a lot of them, you know, just being so busy. I mean, it's great just to have ideas in a really sort of bite-sized format.
Right. Okay. So, well, you are more in touch than I am, because 16 months ago, I didn't even know that was a thing. So I got this call from this publisher and they said, hey, look, we like what we see in your work. We'd love to publish something by you, which is, you know, it's nice to hear. But they said, here's our deal. We only publish books designed to be read in 1 hour. And they said, do you have any ideas that would fit that format? And I said, well, you know, no, I've never thought about that before. I didn't know that was a thing until just now. So, you know, give me a few days to think about it. But very quickly, this idea of the 10 stories great leaders tell came to mind, because I've been feeling guilty for a while for not being more choiceful. So the more practical reason is, I had a publisher call me and basically challenged me to write a book that you could read in 1 hour that would be meaningful to leaders. And that's what this is.
Oh, that's great. Well, so, you know, you just said how important it is for you to be able to help people determine the right story to tell, you know, that the right story is the most important thing. In some ways, you're kind of telling a story by winnowing those 70 plus types of stories down to just 10 stories. How did you pick the 10 stories that you included in this book?
Yeah. So I settled on four criteria. And the first one was just really pragmatic. Like, these are the stories that my clients ask me most often to help them with. My senior executive clients, can you help me with these, you know, this story or this story? So I just went back and literally counted, you know, which stories are my clients asking me for help with? Secondly, I just used is this reasonable? Are these the types of stories that leaders, or in areas that leaders need to influence in the organization, where they need to exert some influence? So just my own 20 years in the business world, you know, I know that these are important areas. And once you hear the list, you'll know as well. You go, yeah, a leader needs to influence in those areas. But the other two criteria were also pretty pragmatic. I wanted stories that all functional leaders would need to tell as well. So these aren't just 10 marketing stories or 10 engineering stories or 10 IT stories. These are 10 stories that no matter what job function you're in, if you're the head chief creative, if you're the head of research and development, doesn't matter. These stories will resonate with you and the people you need to talk to. And then lastly, I wanted to pick stories that wouldn't need to change very often. So there are a lot of types of stories I advocate leaders use that they're really only going to use it for a few weeks, and then the need is gone. Mm-hmm. But these are like 10 evergreen stories that are rarely going to change. So it would behoove you to spend some time developing these stories and be able to deliver them well and often.
All right. So what you just sort of teased us, so I guess I have to ask the question now. What are the 10 types of stories that you included?
Yeah, you have to ask. So I'll give away the whole book right here. So these are the 10. So, and the first four kind of go together.
You wrote a book to be read in 60 minutes. We're going to do the entire thing in 15 right here.
Right. Well, yeah. We're not going to have time to go through the examples, but yeah, I'll definitely give you the table of contents, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the first four go together because they're about setting direction for the organization. So it's where we came from, a founding story; why we can't stay there, a case for change story; where we're going, a vision story; and how we're going to get there, which is a strategy story. So, you know, that every leader's got to be able to articulate that path from past, present to future, where we came from, where we're going, how we're going to get there. So those are four different stories. Now, the next four kind of go together as well, but they're more about who we are as an organization. So it's what we believe, a corporate values story; who we serve, so a customer story, what we do for our customers, which is kind of a classical sales story, and then how we're different from our competitors, which I call a marketing story because marketing is really about differentiating yourselves from your competitors. Yeah. And then the last two kind of go together as well, but they're much more personal to the leader. Why I lead the way I do. So it's a personal leadership philosophy story. And then the last one is why you should want to work here. You, whoever I'm talking to at the time, why you should want to come work here. So it's a recruiting story because all leaders, not just the folks in HR, need to bring in talented people to work in the organization. Yeah. So those are the 10 I came up with.
That last one reminds me of the Steve Jobs, you know, do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life or you want to change the world, right?
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly the kind of story that you need to come up with for your business to convince people to come there.
Yeah. Okay. So give us just a couple of examples, of stories that you included. What are some of your favorite stories that you included in this book?
Yeah, so one of my favorite is that that marketing story, how we're different from our competitors. And the example I used here came from a guy named Sherrad Madison, who's the CEO of United Building Maintenance, and it's a commercial cleaning company. And so these are the folks that come in and clean your offices at night. Anyway, he always tells the story of to a new prospect, I suppose, what he does when he gets a new client. And he says, when I get a new client, there's always a 30-day transition period where the old, you know, cleaner is winding up operations and we're getting ready to take over at the end of the month. And he said, during that 30 days, I always do the same thing. I sneak into the building in the middle of the night just to watch and see what they're doing. And it's very pragmatic because he says most of those employees are contract employees. So I'm going to inherit them at the end of the month. And I want to know if they're well equipped to do their job and if they're working hard. And anyway, so I snuck into the Verizon building in the middle of the night in New Jersey because I'm taking over the contract at the end of the month. And he said, I go to the first floor and I see this guy vacuuming the carpets. And he's using this just residential quality vacuum cleaner like I use at home. And he said, those corridors are 12 feet wide and a half a mile around. You know, do the math. It's going to take the guy a month just to vacuum the carpets. And plus that vacuum cleaner is not going to do a good job. It's going to break down after 2 weeks anyway because it's not made for that kind of use. So, you know, when we took over, I put him into a triple wide, industrial grade vacuumer that'll do the job much better in a fraction of the time. And, and by the way, it'll last forever. He said, so I went to another floor and I saw somebody shampooing the carpets. And he said, kind of the same story. He's using one of those walk-behind squeeze bottle shampooers like I use at home. And the same result. It's going to take forever. It won't work very well. So when we took over, we put him in one of those riding, commercial-grade shampooers so that, again, does the job in a fraction of the time, lasts forever. Plus, it gets the guy off his feet. So I have fewer workman's comp issues. And so that means my client has fewer workman's comp issues. But he said the last thing I wanted to do was go check out how they're dusting the offices. So I went and I looked on top of the file cabinets. And sure enough, there was a half a moon swiped out on the top of every one of them. And he said, I know exactly what that means. And you probably do too. What it means is that the people dusting the cabinets, because those cabinets are like 5.5 feet tall. It means those people are not tall enough to reach the back of the cabinet. That's why you see that half moon swiped out. And he said, the truth is they'd be better off not dusting it at all because it's the contrast between the dirty part and the clean part that makes it obvious that it's not being cleaned properly. So he said, we took over. We just gave it. We didn't hire taller people. We just gave them all, 18-inch plastic extension wands for their dust claws so they can reach the back. Problem solved. So imagine he could go into this, prospect's office and say, the three reasons why we're better than our competitors is we use industrial strength vacuum cleaners and riding shampooers and 18-inch extension wands, and that's why we're better. And of course that would be true, but that's not nearly as effective as the story that differentiates them, because you can now see, Todd, and anybody listening to this, you can see in your mind's eye that guy riding around in that shampooer like the Zamboni driver at the ice skating rink, right? You can see the people easily reaching the back of the cabinets with their extension wands on their dust cloth. So it paints a much fuller, memorable picture to see the difference than just hear the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think also it shows the personal level of attention, right? You're not speaking in the abstract. You're speaking in specifics, right? And you're showing that this was the result of somebody really taking an interest in the people working in the organization.
Right. Yeah. It says a lot about him personally, just the fact that he would go do that. Right. So, yeah. So I'll give you one other if you want it.
Yeah, sure. That'd be great.
Yeah. The personal leadership philosophy story. I really like this because you know people like this. In fact, you and I might have been this person at one point in our careers where you have a list of my personal leadership operating principles, and it's one page long, and you give it to somebody when they're your new boss or they're your new employee. Did you ever go through that phase?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right. I did too. And every one I've ever been given, I've hated. And the reason, not that they weren't good, but because you could change the name at the top and it wouldn't matter like whose list it was, because they were almost always the same. Well, I add value and I'm shareholder focused and I'm whatever. All the buzzwords are all in there, right? So instead of that, what you need is a story that explains why you have become the leader that you are. Why is it you lead the way you do? And so my favorite example of this comes from a guy named Mike Figliolo, who was a West Point graduate and so spent some time in the Army. And one of his early leadership opportunities was leading a platoon of tanks. And they had a training exercise. So this is all safe training exercise. This isn't real combat. But anyway, it was literally 400 tanks on one side of this 5-mile by 10-mile fake battlefield versus 400 other tanks on the other side. And they were going to do battle, but with lasers. And, you know, so it's basically laser tag, but with real tanks. And he happened to be commanding the first tank in the 400 on his side to go into battle. So he had to sit down the night before with the commanding officer and figure out the battle strategy and a map of the terrain and figure out where to turn and where to go to get the best strategic position and all that. So the mission starts. They all start racing out on the field, and his tank is first, and it's 399 tanks behind him. And he gets to the first point where he needs to make a decision to turn right or left, and he doesn't know what to do because the battlefield looks different, you know, when you're peeking out a little hole at 30 miles an hour getting shot at than it does in the conference room on a map, right? Mm-hmm. So he has two choices. He can either stop the tank, get out the map, turn the light on, and figure it out, and then move forward, or he can just make an educated guess and go. And he decided to do the second thing. So he yells out, "Driver, turn left." So the driver turns left. He turns left. 15 seconds later, the little whoopee light on top of his tank starts going off, which means you got shot by a laser, you're dead. So, you know, pop the hatch, get out, you're done for the day. You know, 5 seconds later, the tank behind him, whoopee light goes off, you're dead. 5 seconds later, tank behind him, you know, you're dead. Okay. Clearly he made the wrong choice. He should have gone right. And if he had taken the time to get the map out and look, he would have figured out that left was the wrong decision. He should have gone right. But tank number four behind him saw three tanks get shot and killed. So tank four turned right. And then 396 other tanks turned right, and they won the battle. So his lesson, even though he obviously made a mistake, a terrible leadership, you know, experience, and, you know, but what he learned from that was that sometimes being decisive, even when you're wrong, is better than being right and being slow about it. Because while you're still in analysis paralysis trying to figure out the right thing to do, your competition is still moving forward and shooting at you. So sometimes it's better to make the wrong decision quickly because you'll figure it out. You'll find out quickly that that was the wrong decision and you can readjust, as opposed to waiting for months and months and months in the conference room trying to make the perfect decision.
That's a great example of something, A, that was sourced in personal experience, and B, something that can apply so broadly to so many situations, right? When you talk about leadership philosophy, I mean, to that effect, like where do you find these stories? You know, most people are saying, well, this is great, but you know, do I go back and like, well, once when I was in kindergarten, you know, like, how do you find these stories to tell, to the people that you lead?
Yeah. So sometimes it is looking through your own past is definitely one of the places to look. But you and I personally don't have enough personal stories to fill the bill of all the stories that you need as a leader, as a wife, a husband, a, you know, father, mother, whatever. So you need to ask other people for them. So I tell people, start with a wish list. I mean, make a list of the type of stories that you need. And so that's what this list of 10 is supposed to be. This is the starting point. If you had to pick the most important 10, these would be them. But you need hundreds, I think, in the course of your career. Make a list. And then literally share that list with people. I'm looking for stories about this. I'm looking for stories about this. And you would be surprised how willing people are to share their stories with you when they know you're looking for one. And so that's the best way to do it. But I've got really creative clients who do things like they hold monthly story circles where they just get together and have order pizza. And the only thing you're allowed to do during that hour is eat pizza and tell stories. And, you know, you'll get 15 or 20 stories told in that 1 hour period of time. You know, I have clients who at the weekly staff meeting, somebody's job every week is to tell one story. And this week it's my week and next week it's your week. And you know what you're eating. A good story that will be helpful to people that other people can use. So after the course of a year, you got 52 great stories. So you'll come up with creative ways once you start thinking in terms of I need to collect more stories.
Mm. Well, that's fantastic. Well, Paul, this has been fascinating. I love the work that you do. It's so important. I mean, you and I both, I know, teach leaders that story is such a critical part of connection, but also vision casting and all of that. And your work has been deeply inspirational in my own work. So thank you for what you do. If people want to learn more about you and what you do, where can they go to do that?
Yeah, thank you for that. So probably my website's the easiest place. So that's leadwithastory.com. It's just the name of my first book. I was never more creative after that. But that's probably the best place. Everything's there.
Fantastic. Well, Paul, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us and sharing your story about stories with us.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
And as always, thank you for listening. Hey, if you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or jump on the email list at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe to get everything delivered by email. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.